Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 267. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
We're spinning rock and roll platters down here in Lakeville.
Ow! And Phil Wilson.
Rock and roll platters?
Yeah,
you used to spin those.
Way back in the day. Remember?
I never did platters.
You never did platters?
We played albums, but we never played platters. Platters was more of a 40s thing, I think.
So was this spinning the wax thing? Was this
the stacks of wax?
Was that?
That was actually a 50s or 60s thing. You know, okay. we were of the disc jockey era. Though I've never ridden a disc in my life.
But so you were more mod.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I was in radio when it was.
So you must feel good that the 70s are coming back. You know, first of all, mid-century modern came back because of Mad Men, and now. Yeah. Now the 70s,
which is riddled with flaws in its presentation of the era. But yes, go ahead.
Oh, just go with it, Phil.
It's just a show, damn.
Yeah, jeez.
Sorry.
Yeah,
you always have to ruin it for us, don't you?
Well, you know, my wife has a science crush on Neil deGrasse Tyson. And sure. I think the guy's awesome. If you've ever listened to his podcast, he's hilarious. But boy, talk about a buzzkill. With science movies and stuff, you know, where first of all, he gets after what's his name, the director of Titanic, for them looking up into the starry sky, and it's the wrong sky,
right?
And so James Cameron,
only he would see that.
James Cameron is so takes it to heart so much that when he does the director's cut of Titanic, he changed the sky. Jeez. Well, but you know, I mean, but sometimes, you know, you'll look through IMDb, because I have my iPad out, and sometimes when we're watching movies, and we'll stop it, and my wife will say, "Now, who is that character? Where have we seen him or her before?"
Right.
And so you'll look it up on IMDb, but sometimes you'll read some of the goofs in IMDb, and it'll be stuff like, "Well, actually, the gun that he was holding was not introduced until November of that year."
Which is really deep.
Who the hell is going to know that except maybe some geek that works for a gun manufacturer? I mean, you know, at some point you got to kind of let it go.
Did you see that Neil deGrasse Tyson was on, he was on Fallon, I think, the other night, and he told the most flawed science fiction movie ever. He considers The Black Hole. That Disney produced back '60s or no '70s or '80s, something like that. Yeah, he said it's the most flawed.
Did he also go the other way and say what's the closest one to reality?
I don't know. I think I was nodding off. I can't imagine Fallon wouldn't have asked him that.
Well, actually, he did in fact say that at one point, and it was Deep Impact. And I had never you ever seen the movie?
Yeah.
I had never seen the movie.
Spoiler, big tidal wave at the end.
Yeah. But he said that in fact, I'm looking at the post right now. It was the only movie that his favorite was Deep Impact. Turns out it was the only movie he did not find scientific fault with.
Really?
Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Sure. Why not?
But just fun facts.
That's a key thing to do. We have Neil deGrasse Tyson in our show notes. That's great.
I think the guy,
if you've
ever watched any of his podcasts or when he does these panel interviews, the guy is really funny.
His cameos on shows are great too.
Yeah, he comes across as just a really great guy.
Yeah,
watching the Cosmos series?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Still missed billions and billions in the original.
Well, effect. I still think that it's not this Cosmos series. Really, I don't think, taking advantage of the essence of who he is. That's my own personal opinion. But
it seems too preoccupied with the special effects.
Well, yeah.
And their crazy cartoon stuff. But anyway.
But still.
It's still a good show.
There's some learning going on there.
You can do some learning.
That's right.
You can do some learning in there.
That's right.
Let's kind of get, obviously, the big at least for us anyway, the big event over the week was WDC, the keynote presentation on Monday. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's Can I quick little roundup of what's been going around locally? And I know that, you know, Tim is always on the lookout at our friends at Target, and they've been making a mobile push. And
the weekly Target thing. Similar to last time. But it looks like now we're going to get both the same-day delivery first, even before the other Target markets. And their new app that shows a map of the store you're in. So I guess they're going to do this with iBeacons, I would imagine. But how are they going to get this working with Android folks is a good question. Well, so maybe they're using something else.
Yeah. No, Beacons work with Android. It's just Bluetooth Low Energy technology. You can also use it in Android, which is it's an interesting thing that just proves the power of the Apple marketing machine. You know, it's a beacon is a beacon until you put an eye on the front of it. Then all of a sudden it's Apple and it's really, you can use it on any platform.
Well, but do we have any idea how many phones, Android based phones have Bluetooth Low Energy?
Anything after four, two?
Well, the hardware has to have the new Bluetooth.
It has to have
So,
yeah. There's no way of knowing. So, you know, that's the big argument that you little Apple fanboys always bring up.
I think it's any Android, any like
defensive.
I think it's like any high-end Android phone over the last year or so has had that version of Bluetooth in it. Mm-hmm. So, and I know it's activated, you know, in both Jelly Bean and KitKat for you know, on the operating system side. So I just got 443 the other day.
I wonder if that's the update that I got.
Really?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's the latest, greatest, yeah. My daughter has a Moto X. She just got it last night.
So who are they going to use for same-day delivery, Target? Who are they going to use?
I don't know. I guess they're going to have their own fleet of vehicles, maybe.
Really?
Wow. Are they going to use like UPS or FedEx? I guess probably that. It's unclear. It doesn't say who's going to make the deliveries.
Yeah, I've been looking around. I haven't been able to find anything. And I pinged a guy I know at Target. I haven't heard back from him. I was hoping to before this show, but
I hate to tell you this, Steve, but Steinhoffel's gone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he and I were so connected. He was always sending me emails about what was happening at Target.
Yeah, what do you think about this, Steve?
Yeah, and I would give my opinion, you know.
Yeah. Should I upgrade that? That's you know, our credit card system.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, and I had seen this because I sent this off to a couple of people, but this Target taking aim at on-the-go millennials with mobile commerce push. I had not read this particular article. I'd seen two others, but this is very interesting. Mainly because it's you know, there is a significantly higher expectation on someone that is, you know, 20 to 30, let's say, that, wait a minute, what do you mean it doesn't work? What do you mean I can't just buy it here and have it delivered? What do you mean I can't pick it up at the store? What do you mean I can't start an order on my computer, but I got to go so I get my car and somebody else is driving, of course, but I can finish my transaction on my phone, you know? You can tell them all the reasons why that's unreasonable, but that's what the expectation is. So what do you think?
Those digital natives, you know, they're so demanding.
They are.
I remember back before when we had to go to, you know, we had an answering service and a pager and we had to go to payphones. Remember those days, guys?
You know, it is funny when you
had to make sure you had a bunch of dimes, you know, come on.
Yeah. Well, I was watching the other night, I was streaming an old Rockford Files. It was a show that my dad absolutely loved to watch. And so I would watch it every once in a while. Like when I'd be over at his house, he'd be watching these Rockford Files reruns. And he'd say, hey, do you mind if we watch this one? And I go, okay. And so we just sit there and watch together. And you know, it was kind of a bonding thing. It was just so funny to see him racing in his car to get to a payphone. You know, it's just, actually, that's one of the reasons, I don't know about you, but that's one of the reasons that I love the new Sherlock on PBS. Cause I always wondered what it would have been like if Sherlock had today's technology. You know, what if Sherlock had DNA? What if Sherlock had, you know, a cell phone, and now we get to know.
True, and he has an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just watched the. It came out on. I missed it on PBS, so it came out on Netflix this week.
Right.
So I watched the first episode of the most recent series last night. Good. It's a good one.
Yeah, I really like the show. Did you notice, by the way, that Moriarty uses an Android phone?
Yeah, but he's, I can't say. If you haven't seen the show.
Yeah, don't say.
I don't want to say any more spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he does. All the bad people apparently use Android for some reason.
Yeah.
Well.
So Bogo Pogo is a developer, local developer, that debuted this new free coupon app. Have you tried it out?
I have. Just before the show, I got it from the Android Market, downloaded it, and it doesn't look like there's any offers in there yet.
Oh, no. Well.
I mean, there's a bunch of placeholder offers, but there's no, like, real offers from, you know, Pizza Hut or any other local, you know, like Harry's, which is right down the street from where we live here.
Right.
I was expecting to see, you know, free hors d'oeuvre or something. But nope, not yet. So give it some time. We'll give them a few weeks to build up some clientele, but it's this is a reasonable idea, and it's good for local restaurants to promote what they're doing, and it's all free right now. It's free for both consumers and for the restaurants for I think the article said 6 months. So,
yeah. Well, so excuse me. One of the things that I didn't know, because I love these apps where. You know, you can pull up realtor.com and you can say, show me the listings near me, and other location-based applications. And then we've had local developers who have built deal sites where show me the deals near me. And that can be deals for anything, really. Pardon me. And so the good news is that you can find things near you. The bad news is if you have all these apps running in the background, all with location turned on, your battery's going to last about an hour.
Yeah. That's why you need a bigger iPhone, is so you can have a bigger battery.
Yeah, right. But can I ask you, I mean, have you heard anything relative to location basis being built into hardware on either Android or iPhone? I didn't see anything haven't heard anything or read anything about it, WWDC, but you know, in the same way that Nike moved away from, they fired their hardware engineers, kept their software engineers, and moved away from having their own hardware because Apple, for example, had built in the ability to have, essentially a pedometer and an accelerometer-based location stuff built into the phone itself. And so you don't need a separate piece of hardware because the phone, you can just tap into what the phone's gathering anyway in that little portion of the central processing unit. So I'm just wondering if anybody's doing that. Have you heard, so you haven't heard anything then?
No, if anyone does it, it'll be Apple because, you know, everybody else uses pretty standard CPUs and Apple's the one that's, you know, designing their own.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would imagine that would be something that they would pioneer.
Well, I'm going to have to download this app and give it a try and see what
this happened. What happened to Phil?
I'm here. I'm back.
Oh, okay.
My apologies.
You have any thoughts on this app? Have you checked it out?
No, I haven't had a chance to take a peek at it yet. No.
Okay. No. So. Yeah, it's sort of premature at this point. It's very early. And there's nothing to see at the moment.
But, yeah.
We'll nothing see. To see we'll here. See. Move along.
Yeah, I'll keep it on the phone for a few weeks and I'll check back in and see how they're doing.
Good.
Good. Well, our buddies up in St. Cloud and Twin Cities, NativeX, who has their mobile ad exchange.
We need a new ad platform, damn it. That's all there is to it.
Well, so what's interesting is this article with Ryan Weber in Real-time media and marketing. I haven't even read, I didn't even know this existed, but of course.
Yeah, it's one of the media post publications. They seem to have, you know, dozens of different ones.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Tim reads them all, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I don't read them all, but when I see a local thing like this, I pay attention.
Well, there you go. Well, so here's the question. You know, there's the old adage about competitive advantage that you can either do easy things better, cheaper, faster than anyone else. And that's an advantage, competitive advantage. Or you can do the really, really, really hard things well. And that's a huge competitive advantage because, it, you know, the learning curve and the ability to execute is really hard for anyone else. So it's kind of a barrier to entry. And that's how I view, and without even knowing too much about the intricacies of NativeX's ad exchange platform, that's kind of my view, is that they've created this thing that is really, really hard to do, but they're doing it well. And what do you guys know about the adoption of their platform and how it's going?
I guess I don't really know, to tell you the truth. Okay. I haven't really investigated it because, you know, it's one of those things that I haven't had a call on myself.
Got it.
So they're only Android and Windows Phone? I mean, you really can't do this kind of thing on iOS, can you?
I don't believe so, even though I'm assuming that both of the Weber brothers are out there at WWDC. So if Apple's opening up, like they're opening up, which was kind of a surprise, and we'll get to that in a minute, they could maybe be opening this in ways that we're not aware of yet.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Yep.
Anyway.
Anywho.
Speaking of WWDC.
And we were. Go ahead. Okay.
Let's kick it off with a local angle with this Mayo story. This is a Julio story. So just, you know, Mayo is involved in this health kit stuff.
Right. Well, you know that that Apple's been hiring around the healthcare space, health technologies. And Mayo has always been kind of at the forefront of new technologies. I mean, if you look at, you know, they were one of the first ones to do a health CD-ROM back in the 90s. Their Mayo Ventures invested in IVI Publishing and built out the Mayo Clinic, the health book or fact book or something. But this looks like a significantly bigger app project, but it feels, and I get a sense that it's more of a venture or more of an alliance and partnership than it is. Well, just helping them because it appears that Mayo's guiding Apple in some ways with respect to health process and the kinds of things that need to be delivered.
Well, what's somewhat surprising about some of the announcements that Apple made, and this health kit is one of them, and what they're doing with the home automation is another one. Is they're not getting out in front of this with their own app or their own product. They're just putting in enabling technologies to allow people like Mayo to come in. And, you know, Apple provides a nice dashboard, but everybody else is providing the data behind the scenes and the app. So they're trying to develop this ecosystem of health apps and I would assume health monitoring hardware too. They did show the Fitbit, but I'm sure they're working with everybody else as well. So that's an interesting approach where in the Steve Jobs era of Apple, they would want to own the whole thing, right?
Exactly.
Now it seems like we're getting into a new era, I guess the Tim Cook era, where they're more open to this putting, you know, to say, hey, you know, this is something that we want to build into the product, but we're not going to own it. We're just going to provide this background stuff and allow third parties to provide the you know, the real applications to it. So interesting approach.
Well, it is kind of interesting. And that's kind of a point of discussion too, that I wanted to ask with you guys, you know, Steve, especially with you and your history with Apple, does this mark a good shift, bad shift, or just a shift from a standpoint of how Apple does business?
I think it's a major shift in terms of being open.
Is it a good thing?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Because look at how everybody's really nailed Apple for not doing the cloud well. Because they've tried to do everything themselves, right? And actually, at one point, I wrote a blog post on my own blog about how great it would have been if Google would have been the internet infrastructure play and the in essence the back end driving a lot of the front end technologies that Apple was delivering. If that had been a really strong marriage, it would have been perfect, because it would have been kind of the best of everything. And now that's obviously never going to happen in any way, shape, or form. But I think all of the APIs that they put out, the Health Kit, the new Swift language, Home Kit, all of the things that they did at WWDC, which we're going to talk about in a moment, I think was really great. And this is going to let them move faster, because if you can align with an organization like Mayo, I mean, Mayo knows everything about everything with respect to process and being a provider of healthcare services, and doing so in a world-class way. And Apple, you know, geez, we got some guy that's got to try to figure it out. It's going to take him forever, you know, if you're leading a health direction. So I think it's a great thing.
Well, it seems like a very savvy thing for them to do, because Android has caught up in many ways, and in some ways surpassed iOS. And now Apple is kind of circling back and making it very difficult for Google to respond and to kind of catch back up. So it just seemed like this allows them to widen the distance between what Google's doing with Android and what they're doing.
And the punchline is, we're all going to win, because the race is going to make everything better and cheaper and faster. The thing for me is, have you guys been to Micro Center lately? St. Louis?
Park? Not lately, no.
Yeah. I was there the other day.
So you walk in the front door and there's a little mobile display there, and AT&T and Verizon are on one side. On the other side are some mobile devices by a company called Blue, BLU.
Mm-hmm.
And they range in price point. They're Android-based unlocked phones, and they range in price from $59 to $299. And I got to tell you that there are three of those models, maybe four, that I'd buy in a nanosecond. In fact, I'm considering it, because AT&T won't unlock all of our phones before we go to Italy this summer. I've tried three times now, and I'm getting really mad.
Why wouldn't they do that? I mean, you've been a long-term customer.
Been a customer since 2007. And so, yeah, why would they not?
That seems crazy, because yeah. I just unlocked a phone, T-Mobile phone. And you just call them up, say, hey, you know, as long as you're 90 days in good standing and yada, yada, yada. And they're just like, oh, okay, fine. Samsung, boop, 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 boop. Here you go.
Yeah, we pay these guys. We pay these guys over $3,000 a year for our family plan. You'd think they'd let it go, but yeah, I know. Anyway,
you're living in a dream world there.
Well, but I'm thinking about buying
like
one of these
for $100 that you can use on this trip, right?
Well, that's exactly what I'm looking for, is just go and buy one and pop a SIM card in there and be done with it. But that's one of the things too that I look at that's going to potentially hurt Apple. I mean, they're still at the top end, but not everybody wants to sign up for a 2-year thing and so on. And I think there's just so many options on the Android side. I'm not going to switch, but.
Oh, come on. No. Come on over.
You might for your Italy trip though.
Yeah. Well, I might actually, what I'm toying with the idea of doing is buying an Apple iPad mini, and also popping a SIM card in that. Cause I can use, I've got phone apps on that, but hey, let's talk about WWDC. What was the one thing that grabbed you? My wife and I watched the keynote again last night because she hadn't seen it. She'd been out of town.
And we guys watched. Really know how to party.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, Friday night. Yeah, it's
come awesome. On, honey. Let's watch WWDC.
She was the one that
watched. Hey, honey, have you seen Federici's hair lately?
Yeah. But
well, you're going to see a lot of it.
And he hung up on his mom. That was the one thing I took away from it. Like, he hung up on his mom.
That was
Greg,
funny.
You should
that was
be.
Funny.
Dumbass. You never hang up on your mom.
Well, I think the highlight was all the developer-facing stuff like Swift. That will be a major, major, major development.
Yeah. Swift was the big thing. I think that was probably the biggest thing. As the new programming language. That's a big deal.
Well, for people that don't know that are listening, Swift is a new higher-level programming language, Cocoa-based, that really will accelerate the ability to code and develop apps.
Supposedly.
Supposedly, yeah. We haven't used it. I can't really evaluate it. Yeah. Well, but there's also some buzz from developers who are writing about it already, who have said, based on what they saw at WWDC, that it looks pretty interesting. It's just for them, for some of them, they said it's going to, even though you have to code separately for both platforms, that there really isn't any cross-platform development unless you want to do something really basic. And because you have to write to the hardware and the OS specifically, but this will make life easier for developers, but also it'll make it a little bit harder to cross-platform develop. So I thought that was an interesting take.
Well, that's kind of a bummer, huh? Apple's just trying to make it really easy to write for iOS, but a little harder to write it for Android.
Well, but you know, in a way, you know, I've looked at about 10 different tools for creating tablet-based apps and delivering content and so on. I got to tell you that iBooks Author is the easiest thing I've ever used, and incredibly powerful, and it's really simple because I know the web stuff, so it's simple for me to build widgets for it. But it's just amazingly powerful. But I'd love to be able to use that as a cross-platform development tool. But that's not going to happen.
Yep.
Oh, so Yosemite looks really interesting and good. What I liked was the integration between devices.
Yeah,
that's that was pretty deal. Cool.
That's a big deal.
Here's another big thing is, and I read this in a Matt Mullenweg post, you know, the guy that started WordPress on his ma.tt blog about Safari. And I didn't hear this during the keynote, but this came out apparently in one of the development sessions that everybody's been kind of pissing and moaning about the fact that their WebKit-based browsers in their apps for iOS have never been able to perform like Apple can make theirs perform because they're writing to a lower level of Safari, of WebKit for the browser. So they've never been able to match the performance of the Safari browser. Even if you build your own browser for iOS.
I am shocked. I am shocked.
Well,
why is that, do you suppose?
They're using undocumented APIs?
You're kidding. Yeah.
It ain't so.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like it's fair.
That's not fair. Yeah. And so anyway, the bottom line is they changed that now. And so now anybody writing another browser or a browser in app, it'll perform at the same level as Apple's browsing. So I thought that was a big deal. And that didn't really come out.
Well, there was so much stuff. I mean, it was 2 hours long, and they packed it full of stuff. I mean, there were some, you know, like slides that were like very detailed, like the one where they showed the system requirements for iOS 8. You're just scanning it, and all of a sudden, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So it was. They were obviously moving very, very quickly to get all this stuff in.
Right.
Well, I thought it was an interesting, you know, I know that that Graham and Steve were somewhat disappointed because there were no hardware announcements, but I thought it was really an interesting rollout of the OSs. And I loaded the Yosemite onto my work computer.
And you did the beta already?
Yeah, it's fairly stable. I've had some app crashes. There's some conflict with current apps right now. But all in all, you know, I think the biggest thing anybody's going to notice if they're not a major, you know, Apple mobile user is, you know, the fact that you know, you're gonna probably see that sharing opportunity a whole lot more. The trouble is that I have an Android device, so it's not that huge piece for me. I also have, I also use Chrome mostly. So all of those Safari changes, and I use Gmail for strictly for my mail. So I'm not going to be able to necessarily take advantage of a whole lot of the mail features where that's some of the more front facing stuff is, you know, the ability to mark up, emails, the ability to, you know, sync between, you know, start an email on one device and move to another device, you know, that sort of thing. So, but, you know, the thing that you notice right out of the box is the design. It looks remarkably like iOS.
Well, so here's what I found fascinating was as my wife and I are watching this, I did not expect this. She looked at me and said, you know, she pauses at the keynote and she says, you know, the whole advantage that you always pitched me on the reason that we were on in Gmail and the reason that I used a web browser instead of Entourage at the time was that you'd have exactly the same experience regardless of what computer you were on, if you were in the office, if you were at home. Because she would always do this stuff where she'd be like, oh my God, I downloaded an email because she was on POP3 at the time, and it's on my work computer. And she would literally have to get in the car and drive the mile and a half to the office to get that email. You know, that was just a crazy maker. Well, here's the kicker. The kicker is she said, you know what? Because we can do that IMAP thing now, she said, which we've always been able to do, but she said, I want those features in mail, so can we set up my computers to use that when it comes out? And she really wants that stuff. And I thought that was a really interesting take. And is that going to happen to other people? Are they going to look at this stuff and say, you know, I really want that continuity-based stuff. I want the AirDrop between iOS and Mac. I want the ability to easily access my iPad as a hotspot, you know, and so on. Do you think this kind of stuff is going to drive people to want a more unified experience?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's very clear that Apple wants you to consume their entire stack. So they get you, let's say they get you on the iPhone, and then, you know, next time you're going to buy a computer and you can do this kind of stuff, won't you be more inclined to get a Mac?
Well, I think that the whole WWDC keynote was really somewhat veiled, but not so veiled, total head-on attack of Google. It was basically, you know, integrating all the things that Google is doing now and moving it into the Mac and iOS platforms. It really is. I mean, there are obviously the blatant slams against Google and Android early on, but there was also the fact, you know, the not so subtle, you know, the new functionality of Spotlight using Bing and that sort of a thing, and then all of these actually calling the storage, online storage room, is Cloud Drive. You know, it's like, oh my God, the guys at Google are saying, somebody gave the lawyers on the line. You know, calling it Drive is. I mean, that's a full frontal assault right there.
It's iCloud Drive.
Yes, but it's still Drive. Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that I was actually asked by several people was because I guess I've been with SmartThings now for so long, people ask me what are your thoughts about what HomeKit does? And for those that are listening, if you didn't see it, HomeKit is the ability to integrate. They've already partnered with all these hardware and companies and lighting companies and so on to essentially have an API to be able to control all these different devices. And so in theory, app developers will be able to do things like, hey, when a new message comes in, your Philips Hue bulb will glow orange. And when it's something else, it'll glow blue. And, you know, when it's something else, it'll be green, you know, that kind of stuff. Because they'll be able to write to the API, and then that will actually talk to the product. But then you could see that app developers could also build more home automation based stuff. So I pinged a source at SmartThings who doesn't speak for the company officially, but they're looking at this as a positive. As am I. I'm really looking at this as a positive in that it'll help to accelerate the category, but also the number of devices that are available, because rather than go out and pre-certify everything yourself, you'll be able to have things that just work. and you'll be able to take advantage of that. So I thought that was kind of an interesting take. I'm pinging their PR people and hoping to hear back in the next few days.
I spoke with Liz Tupper, who's now working over at SmartThings, on Thursday morning, and Liz confirmed that Apple has been in touch with SmartThings, and she said the same thing that your source probably said, was, you know, they're very much thinking it's a very big positive to have a company like Apple in the space. But I'm sure there's some sort of, you know, I blatantly said, any talks of selling to Apple? Obviously, you know, that's definitely high line stuff. But right. Yeah, I think that, you know, the fact that Apple has reached out to SmartThings is a good thing. She didn't have any details as to what the discussion entailed. So, still, it offers some opportunity, I think. But I also, you know, when I look at that, the platform it is, once again, it's co-opting, you know, technology or other services that others are opting back, you know, and bringing it into their own and trying to make it their own. It's like the beacon concept that we were talking about, Steve, is, you know, just because it's iBeacon doesn't mean it's Apple only technology. It's Bluetooth Low Energy. So it's everybody's technology, but Apple has this power to make it seem like it's all theirs with simple branding and marketing and throwing their weight behind it. And a lot of times just making it better.
Well, and then putting it on the radar screen of people.
Right.
I mean, that's huge.
Well, I would think that SmartThings would have, you know, thought that they kind of dodged a bullet, because Apple could have just come out with their own. The rumor had it, that's what they were going to do.
Right.
You know, and instead they come up with something that is, you know, a enabling technology for them to write to.
Exactly.
So yeah. I think that's, you know, makes their business a lot better as opposed to crushing them, you know?
Well, and I also think that it's, we're still very, very, very early on in the whole Internet of Things and home automation chain, you know, the change in home automation and so on.
Amen, and, brother.
And this is a great way for them to see what works, because they're really great at seeing what's working, and then jumping in and co-opting the space. So that could be kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, kind of the underlying theme throughout the whole announcement keynote was, you know, that they are going to really enable a lot of both hardware, but also apps doing, you know, allowing developers to do things they haven't been able to do. And one of the things that kind of got me excited was that demo that they did of that Zen Garden app, which this looks fantastic. And, you know, that is running on an iPad. And what if they took the same chips, you know, that are in the later day or the most recent iPads and iPhones, and stick those into Apple TV? They could easily make that into a gaming console that would, you know, give PlayStation and the Xbox a real run for their money.
Well, you know, people were talking about that they expected that there would be a gaming platform suite of APIs delivered at WWDC for exactly that reason.
But yeah,
didn't happen. Well,
didn't happen. Yeah. But I would think that is going to come up fairly soon, and I would not be surprised if the next version of Apple TV has its own controller and it's open to developers, at least for games.
Yeah. Well, the one last thing I guess to say about WWDC is several articles that came out where people were talking about the mood at WWDC, that it was really upbeat and really positive, and there were just so many things that Apple was doing that were opening up the company and what they're making possible, that are for Apple radical, right? Because they've been closed and proprietary to the nth degree for so long, and so that was kind of a takeaway as well.
Third-party keyboards and iPhones. That's crazy talk.
I kind of saw that as, oh, so they're finally getting Swift. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you get SwiftKey too, which I prefer. But I think that's just great for people on iOS.
Right.
So Friday was the big day that we started seeing all the articles about Apple's first wearable device rumor.
October. October.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that, Mr. Doubting Thomas over there?
Oh, no, they're going to do something. I don't think it's going to be like a watch. I think it's going to be a health band sort of deal. So, you know, we'll see what really comes out.
Interesting.
A health band. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be a sensor because the problem is that
I think it'll
have you seen the latest pictures that they of that Moto, whatever it's called, the
Moto 360?
The Moto Watch. Yeah. The 360.
Yeah.
That thing is massive.
Oh, stop. It's not that big, especially in light of today's, you know, watch size technology. I mean, you can't find a lot of watches that are not huge.
The thing that's holding me back from a Pebble is that it's huge, although that Pebble Steel looks pretty good. So I don't know.
Huge. What are you wearing on your wrist there, Alice?
Nothing. But yeah, this thing looks huge. So I think that Apple won't do it because, you know, it'll just be too big to get the battery in there and to get a screen that's reasonable size. So
I think they'll do it. I think it'll be a watch with sensors. It'll definitely be a truly smart watch. Right now, a lot of the fuel bands and things like that really kind of give you, I don't know, not necessarily really relevant data about your health. I mean, if you wear a Fitbit or something like that, it's like, okay, I can measure my steps. Woo! Or I burn so many calories.
Well,
but it's not giving you real time, you know, heart monitoring and glucose monitoring and things like that, which I think will be part of the next wave of smart watches. So.
Well, here's my prediction. Dick Tracy, the cartoon comic strip, debuted October 4th, 1931.
Ooh.
I think that will be the day that Apple releases their wearable and they'll have a tie-in with Dick
right.
Tracy.
Will Warren Beatty be there?
No.
Wow.
I don't actually have this. I'm kidding Dick with my Tracy. Prediction.
Yeah. You're kidding with your prediction? I don't back off.
I'm kind of a baby.
That actually sounds credible.
It does sound credible. Don't back off, dude.
No.
Come on. Go boldly.
Think so?
Go for it. Why not?
I don't know.
All right. Fine, be that way. Well, with all this talk of in-home technology, I think it would be safe to say we should talk a little bit about
Steve's security tip of the week.
Whoa.
That's crazy. Wow.
Oh, there was a little change up there. Thanks,
Where
Ava.
Where did you get the girl?
Well, that's one of the voices that's available in OS X Mavericks called Ava. Oh, so okay. I recorded Ava saying that. So
that's very nice.
Yeah. It almost sounds like GLaDOS from Portal.
Well, I actually I'm kind of close to her, and so I've been having a little conversations with her. Everyone,
a little conversation.
Yeah.
So talk to me about your security tip of the week there, Speedo.
Okay, so the security tip of the week, I know that I'm getting like a broken record when I talk about VPNs, but they're so brain dead simple now and so cheap that there's really no excuse for not doing it. But here is why I came to this. So there's an article, and I'll put a link in the show notes, called, it's about the evil twin hack. And what the evil twin hack is basically somebody sitting with a laptop running Ettercap, which is a free open source tool, and they do a man in the middle attack. And that way, if you inadvertently connect up to that Wi-Fi, so if it's, you know, if it's Caribou free Wi-Fi and you're at a Caribou coffee, you go, oh, okay, there's the one. And you choose that. And now you're actually connected to that person's laptop, and they're grabbing everything that goes through the clear. Your email, username and password, and anything else that's not encrypted, and they're grabbing all that stuff. And so
Phil, or I mean, I'm sorry, I'm so Steve.
Yeah.
I'm running that Chrome extension called HTTPS Everywhere,
right?
Which forces a secure connection if it's available,
right?
on every site. Am I protected, or should I just continue to use a VPN?
You are whenever. No, you are in fact protected in that case.
Ah, good.
If there's not an SSL exploit, you know, because SSL still has some issues. There's still a new exploit that's been out for 16 years that they just discovered. And so SSL can still has some vulnerabilities. The big Heartbleed that was vulnerability was closed, but there's a new one that they've just discovered. But anyway, here's what I did. I thought, okay, how easy is this to do? And so I went to EtherCap, and there were installs for Linux, Windows, Mac, and others. And so I went to the Mac one, and I downloaded it. And unfortunately, you've got to do a build. And I've got Xcode running on the developer software running on my Mac, but it's just a pain in the butt to have to go through the whole build. So I thought, somebody's probably built an installer that has a binary. Hey, I found one for the Mac at Mac ports. So I went and I downloaded the binary. And I set it up and I ran it on my laptop. And then I asked my son, I go, hey, would you mind looking at the Wi-Fi? And he goes, oh, what's this StevNet free? I said, oh, well, just, you know, just go ahead and so anyway, so I had him log into it, and all of a sudden it was creating this log file, this text file that had everything in it. And so I could see what URL he went to, and then I could see what he put in, what his input was. And when I saw that, I just went, oh my God, I can't believe how simple this is. And I'm not going to put notes in about how to do it, but there are tutorials on the net, how to do man-in-the-middle attack using EtherCap. And it is frighteningly simple. And so, you know, when I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to do yet another one about don't just hook up to any internet connection. So if you're in a coffee shop, make sure it's their actual Wi-Fi hotspot, their own SSID. That's number one. Turn off auto connect. If you've got that enabled on either your Android or iOS phone or on your iPad or on your computer, just don't let it automatically connect to anything. And then, again, strongly consider running a VPN. And that is my security tip of the week.
Are you running a VPN yourself these days?
Oh, you bet I am.
What are you running?
Private Which Internet one? Access. It was $37 a year. I have 5 devices that I can run on it. So I have my iMac, my MacBook Pro, my iPad, my iPhone are all set up. They've got capability for all of those. It's really cheap. And here was the big reason I did it, is because they've got servers everywhere and they're fast. A lot of the VPNs are really, really slow. And so before I bought off on this and started using it, and these guys also don't keep log files. That's another bonus.
But that you know of.
Well, no, I mean, everybody, there's been a lot of scrutiny of them. So
I'm sorry, the name of this service again was?
Private Internet Access. So privateinternetaccess.com. Not the easiest URL in the world. I mean, it's very, very simple. And here's the other bonus. And I probably shouldn't say this, but did you know, for example, that I have a zip code in London? And so
really?
I can choose the London server, and I can watch BBC and ITV shows. And there's actually one with Stephen Fry that's just a scream about knowledge. And of course they do a lot of highbrow stuff, but it's really funny. Anyway, so you can have access, and that's just a bonus. Even though more and more of the services like Hulu, for example, people that are outside the United States that are using VPNs, Hulu is now beginning to block IP address blocks of numbers. And so if they say, okay, this particular VPN service is using these IP addresses, we're just going to block them because they've got to be here in the U.S. because of their whole licensing rules. I'm anticipating that more and more of that is going to happen, but for now it's working.
There you go.
So, and now we'll use this when we travel. I have my wife's, we bought another one, and I have my wife's stuff set up so that when she travels, even if she's sitting in a hotel, I tell her, hey, you know what? Hook up to a server near you, and there you go. So, piece of cake.
So you skipped over the story that that Phil set up before.
Trying to tee that up.
Worried, Steve, since you're the only one with a true, you know, networked house, that your house will get hacked?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not because I have you know, good passwords on the machines. You know, firewalls are set up, but you know, you have your modem, and then all the IP addresses in the house handed out to every device are NAT, network address translation. So that's another layer of security, because you'd have to have not only the be able to access the modem, and oh, by the way, boy, does that thing get scanned. Oh, I mean, I'm getting scanned by Russia specifically a lot. They're doing port scanning on my
router?
On my router. And we have a Comcast business class connection now. Well, did you know, because I didn't, Comcast business class provides you with a router that actually uses a different frequency through the cable, but it uses NAT. And so I can't use it because I've got three hotspots set up, and you end up with a double NAT problem.
Right.
It's trying to grab NAT from NAT, and it just doesn't work.
You're using Apple routers too, right?
I'm using Apple routers, yeah.
Which provides even more weird IP routing problems, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I haven't had an issue, but it's harder to do certain things with the Apple ones. I've got a Cisco router too, but I don't want to get too geeky, but it feels like we're pretty well connected and secure. So,
but there,
man,
you go.
Man, is it hard to keep set up? Holy buckets! So that's my tip, kids.
There you go. Very nice. Very nice. And I do like the female voice. It's a nice, refreshing change from all of us.
I was actually going to do a chipmunk voice, but I just
no. Help in. Well, what's happening around the city as far as events coming up?
Well, the Geekettes is coming up again on June 10th.
Right.
Mobile Twin Cities. Now, is this just the get together, the meetup?
Yes.
Okay.
Mobile Twin Cities is, it's been around since, it's Mobile Twin Cities what spawned Mobile March for us.
Did Justin Grammon start that?
Yes, he did.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
does he still lead all the meetings and so on?
No, he doesn't lead all the meetings. In fact, you know, he's still involved, and we're just adding more people into the mix as far as getting, you know, more people to work towards the guests and presentations and things like that. So we're working on that right now. It's sort of a new facelift for that, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, Josh Walker will talk a little bit about WWDC on the 17th of June. We're still got to confirm the location, because again, with changes, we want to make sure that we're in the right place. So I just wanted to put that in at that tab in there, just to let you guys know. Hack MN is also coming up on the 22nd, 21st and 22nd.
Yeah.
At the Nerdery. So that's going to be a good one.
And then this business formation and employment issues at Treehouse Health. Yeah, I'm trying to get a hold of, I know two people that have started healthcare startups, and, neither one of them have gotten back to me by email. I'm thinking, is it going into spam? who knows? Oh, and then the cybersecurity summit. I actually, pinged the, media folks with that. And there's a pretty good possibility that we will get all four of us will be able to get access to that, summit to cover it. If you're interested.
All right. And, I'm there.
Now we all have to get fitted with tinfoil hats. Darn it.
That's right.
Hey, leave me alone. You are so mean to me. Just so everyone knows, I get teased a lot about being paranoid. But you know what?
Oh, come on.
I got teased even more about being paranoid before the Ed Snowden leaks. Now it's just you guys. So
Ed Snowden? You call him Ed Snowden?
Yeah. Edward.
Personal friend of mine.
Yeah, right. Ed. Right. Yeah.
Well, cool. There's lots going on. So we'll be keeping up our fingers on the pulse of what's happening in Minovation here in the next week. And then we'll talk about it again next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast. All right. Take care, boys. Bye. Bye.
Down and walk away from you. You're always so mean. You ain't got nothing nice to say. Why you always so mean? You ain't got nothing nice to say. When you turn out the lights, pretty mama, you wash all your sins away. Be a good man. Sometimes I even pray to love me in the nighttime and you hate me in the day. Like a bullet through my heart, you treat me the way you do. I'd rather get shot down than walk away from you. Gun, pretty mama, time to watch me walk away.